Maine and the global bioeconomy. It's a 21st century term, the bioeconomy, also known as the bio-based economy. Its definition varies a little from organization to organization, but generally, the bioeconomy refers to using natural resources to make products that are environmentally friendly and replace petroleum and gas. Bioproducts include insulation, packaging, rope, clothing, water bottles, new food products, and more. And many believe that with our resource-based economy, Maine is poised to be a leader in the future global bioeconomy. I'm Jennifer Rooks. A conference later this week in Portland highlights the emergence of the bioeconomy here, its potential for growth, and how bioproducts can be part of the climate solution. Today's program is part of Maine Calling's ongoing coverage of topics relating to climate change. Maine's role in the bioeconomy, next. But first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio Studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Here in Maine, there are high hopes for the potential of what's being referred to as the bioeconomy, not only for economic growth in rural areas, but also as a way to address climate change and promote sustainability. What is the bioeconomy? Well, with me here in the studio to answer that question, Dana Eidsness. She is the director of the Maine International Trade Center's Maine North Atlantic Development Office, and Charlotte Mace was, until recently, the executive director of BioBased Maine. She is now the director of the Maine Department of Economic and Community Development's Office of Business Development. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about Maine's bioeconomy? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. or tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome back, Dana, and welcome to you, Charlotte. Such an interesting topic. Dana, I want you to start by just giving us the broad answer. What is the bioeconomy? It seems like one of these terms that came from nowhere.
Right. Well, from the perspective of Maine International Trade Center and Monado, the Maine North Atlantic Development Office, bioeconomy is the use of bio-based materials for product development, materials and processes that can be used for making new products. It's said that anything that you can make from a petroleum-based product, you could make from perhaps a marine-based resource or from a wood product. So that's what we're looking at this year's Maine International Trade Day that's coming up.
Okay, and I want to ask you about this in just a minute. But Charlotte, tell me about, in Maine, what are some of the bio-based products that already exist? What is being manufactured here from natural resources that are being used around the world?
Well, that's a great question, Jennifer. And I would just first like to echo what Dana was saying about the bioeconomy. If you look around you, even where you're sitting right now, most of the things in your home and on your devices and computers and fuel and vehicles, all of that is made, for the most part, from crude oil and natural gas. And in Maine, we don't have crude oil and natural gas that comes naturally out of the state of Maine. But what we do have is an amazing coastline and an abundance of marine resources that we sustainably manage and harvest. And we also have an abundance of forest residuals from our robust forest economy. So if you think about the way the world is currently designed, it's all based on a resource that people are starting to rethink. So everything in our lives that we have, there's this new industrial revolution to replace really all of those items with items that are more sustainable, greener, have a better carbon footprint, and are made not only from renewable resources, but from waste. So that's, a circular economy concept, taking forest residuals, the waste products from our forest industry, and taking things that were previously considered waste and making them into higher value products that we can use in our everyday lives. And it's really exciting in the state of Maine right now. There are numerous examples where these higher value products are being made, but it's a new industry, so we have a ways to go for sure, and more investments to be made.
So tell me about some of the products. What could people relate to that's already out there?
Well, that's really, really interesting. I will talk a little bit about my previous position, which you mentioned, BioBase Maine, which is a great manufacturing trade association that's working to advance the bioeconomy. And years ago, they started making bioplastic out of potato waste. So they took a potato waste generated in the county, and Aroostook County grows more potatoes than any other county in the United States, and they took waste potato starch and made bioplastic out of it, which you've probably seen. You've probably seen utensils and food packaging made out of cornstarch. And so we made it with potato waste. And so that's a possibility. We have agricultural waste that we can use to make bioplastics, but we also have, as I said before, an abundance of forest resources, and we're starting to make biofuel. The University of Maine is making biofuel now, even jet fuel out of wood. We also can make bioplastics used in food and beverage packaging, for example. That's an area of very high growth globally, is sustainable food and beverage packaging.
Well, you mentioned very high growth globally. I know, Dana, that you have a lot of experience with other countries and their bioeconomies. In fact, that's part of the conference that's later this week. Tell me who are the leaders in the bioeconomy? What are they doing differently than what the U.S. is doing? And what can we learn from them?
Yeah, sure. So, in running the Maine North Atlantic Development Office, I work to increase trade, investment, and collaborative activity between Maine and the North Atlantic region, which we define as Northern Europe, Atlantic Canada, Greenland, Iceland, the Faroe Islands. So these are the places I work. And, in addition to these being, some of these being larger markets, I'm also working with a lot of rural, remote, natural resource-based communities and island communities that have undergone some pretty necessary introspection regarding developing their economies and asking the question, what do we have to offer? So themes that I've observed in many of the Nordic countries especially are really an emphasis on 100% resource utilization and creating value really at every point in the value stream, where you might have a natural resource like, in the case of Iceland, a codfish, where you might cut away the fillet and throw away the rest of the fish. In a lot of these communities, there's real intention to focus on utilizing the entire product.
So 100% resource usage, no waste at all eventually.
No waste at all. So, you had asked who some of the leaders are. The ones that come to mind immediately are Iceland, Finland, and to some extent the Faroe Islands as well, as small as they are. In Iceland, again, going back to the cod, the export value of Iceland's cod has increased 100% in the same time that their annual catch has decreased by about 45%. So you might get $12 for the cod fillets, but if you utilize the parts of the fish that were previously tossed in the bin, they're seeing instances where industry is making about $3,500 per fish. And that's utilizing all parts, so the skin, the bones, the enzymes,
the
intestines.
What are they using those for?
They're using them for things like nutraceuticals, making pharmaceutical-grade materials. They're using them for medical products and devices, cosmetics.
Wow. You mentioned Charlotte, University of Maine. Tell me about some of the things going on at UMaine that people may not know about. What kind of work is being done to promote the bioeconomy and potential for natural resource-based products coming out of this state?
Well, there's so much, Jennifer, that's happening at the University of Maine, and I would encourage anyone with an interest in this area to reach out to the university and go and see what's happening. They are very, very committed at the university to being a global leader in forest bioproducts research. So taking woody biomass, and when I say biomass, I mean, the wood itself, and making all sorts of products. So they have an active pilot plant now that's making jet fuel out of woody biomass. This is something that we're seeing increasingly globally, is efforts to make biofuel and jet fuel from woody biomass. They also have a 1 ton per day. That means every day this plant has the capacity to make 1 ton of nanocellulose, which is if you grind up wood and make it smaller and smaller and smaller, and it eventually becomes nano-sized. Nanocellulose is this amazing substance that is incredibly strong yet incredibly lightweight. So there's numerous applications that they're looking into, whether it's in automotive applications. It can be used in the human body because it's naturally hypoallergenic. It's used in food. It's used in shampoo and personal care products. It's used in medical devices. It's this amazing next generation substance that's just made from grinding up wood. So it's really, really interesting. And there's also an Advanced Structures and Composites Institute at the University of Maine, and they're doing a lot of work with 3D printing. There was an announcement just a week or so ago. They have this partnership with Oak Ridge National Labs. They're 3D printing boat hulls using this wood-based composite. So there's really no end to what the university is doing, and they really are a global leader in this space.
Talk about what this means for rural Maine, or might mean for rural Maine.
That's a great question, Jennifer, and one of my favorite questions, because I grew up in rural Maine. And if you've ever heard anyone talk about two Maines, they talk about the more prosperous southern counties in Maine and along the coast. And then we have rural rim counties and other more rural areas in Maine that are experiencing acute economic distress. So 9 out of Maine's 16 counties meet the federal criteria for acute economic distress, and that's because of low per capita income. So if the national per capita income is around $51,000 a year, the people on average in Piscataquis County make $36,000 a year. So as you can imagine, the quality of life in those counties is not what it should be. And when we propose to start a new industry that involves high-paying manufacturing jobs, making products that the world is demanding, for which there's a sharply rising global demand and a strong business case for making them, we can have an increase in good manufacturing jobs in rural Maine. And that's very, very significant to bringing those counties up to the standard that they should be at.
Dana, have we seen this happen in the other countries that you've visited where their rural economies face the same kind of challenges that Maine's rural economies did?
Yeah, absolutely. And someone once described Finland to me as the Maine of Europe. And we've had some Finnish visitors over the years who've flown into Maine and have remarked on how similar we are, mostly in topography, a little bit in our economy. You know, Finland has enormous forest and marine resources. Private citizens in Finland, they own over 60% of the country's forests, so I think that's probably like 1 in 5 people. And 10 to 11 years ago, they found themselves in a very similar position as Maine's forest industry right now. They saw mill closures. There were changes in the pulp and paper industry. There was a shift to, from printing paper on and making magazines and whatnot to more tissue and packaging. And there was also a shift to the digital economy as well, which put a lot of their companies in trouble. But what we see there is that at the highest levels of government, all the way down through industry and the landowners, there's been very intentional commitment to really reinvent this industry towards becoming a robust bioeconomy. And the growth of the bioeconomy in Finland is a relatively new accomplishment. One example of a tremendous investment in a rural area in Finland is the Äänekoski mill, which was put in place by a company called Metsä Group, I think a couple of years ago now. This was a $1.5 billion investment in the north of Finland in a very, very rural area. And it's a great big pulping mill, but they also have some economic development infrastructure around that. They have a company called Metsä Spring that's just focused on innovation and commercializing new ideas around the use of byproducts from the pulping process. And here's this pulp mill that's only 2 years old in this very rural area. And already around it, there are new companies that have come online, companies that make everything from, advanced building materials to medical products to food additives using some byproducts from the pulping process. It's really fascinating.
We'll go to Tony, who's calling from Sanford. Hi, Tony. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. So my name's Tony Wood. With Wood & Sons, which is a fifth-generation family company here in Maine. We've been in the forest products business for a long time. Didn't really have a choice with a family name like that.
I was just going to say, is this real?
It's very real, I can say for sure. So I guess I wanted to chime in. Another product that we have known about for a long time, but I don't feel like a lot of people across Maine or across New England know about is wood pellets. So we've been working for 10 years, and this winter we actually built our first wood pellet manufacturing plant, which was a $7 million investment here in Sanford. We built it beside a Eastern White Pine sawmill down here that also has been invested in and supports, they support hundreds of logging jobs here in the area and sustainable forestry across the region. They have 40 employees, we have 25. And we're making a home heating fuel that's being distributed across New England. We're talking about jet fuels and some pretty cool new technology that's coming around. But wood pellets are something that is here right now and is a great potential to improve value of sustainable harvesting, of waste byproducts from sawmills that are looking for new homes or are looking to get into some different avenues besides just the pulp and paper industry. And we, in Maine, we're basically, I've heard it several times, that we're the Saudi Arabia of wood. We have wood resources that are sustainable and we have the infrastructure to get them. But ironically, we use more heating oil and propane than any other state in the U.S., more per capita than any other state in New England. So to go along with all of the efforts for more electrification of the grid, of heating and of processes, having heat pumps in every home, wood pellets are a really great opportunity to use a local resource to take all of that money that we would spend on heating or energy generation and put 90% of it right back into our local community. And it makes really good, high-paying manufacturing jobs in rural communities, because the wood resource tends to be in those rural communities.
Well, Tony Wood, thank you so much for calling in. And Charlotte gave you a big thumbs up when you called.
Yeah, and I would just add to what Tony was saying. It's this concept of co-location, right? So a lot of these new products and new technologies can sort of bolt on to existing facilities. And I think you'll find that not only the pulp and paper mills in Maine, but in particular the sawmills, they're really looking at that technology that they can add to their existing operations that in no way supplants what they're doing, but adds to it to diversify production at their facility and boost profits. And I think the forest industry in Maine is very, very forward thinking in looking for ways to synergistically create that biorefinery like the Metsä one to look for ways to be the most sustainable.
Tony, thanks so much for calling in. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Community Foundation, where you can create your own charitable fund to benefit Maine. Learn more at mainecf.org. And the Finance Authority of Maine, providing financial solutions that help Maine people achieve their business and higher educational goals. FameMaine.com.
On the next Fresh Air, John Waters. His new book is Mr. Know-It-All, The Tarnished Wisdom of a Filth Elder. At age 73, he has plenty of ideas about what older people should or shouldn't do.
The worst thing is ever to get a convertible, because believe me, old age and windswept do not go hand in hand. It's really a bad look.
Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is looking for new applicants to serve on our Community Advisory Board. The Community Advisory Board serves in an advisory role to Maine Public's Board of Trustees and staff. It consists of between 15 and 20 volunteer members from around the state who meet twice a year, rotating among our Bangor, Lewiston, and Portland offices to offer feedback to Maine Public about radio, television, and online programming and membership issues. For more information, including applications, visit mainepublic.org and click on About and then Community Advisory Board. Thank you for your interest.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Maine's bioeconomy. My guests are Dana Eidsness, Director of the Maine North Atlantic Development Office, and Charlotte Mace, Director of Maine's Office of Business Development. Before her current job, she was the Executive Director of BioBased Maine. We invite you to join in the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Brianna Warner. She is CEO of Atlantic Sea Farms. Brianna, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me to call in.
Tell us about your company. How are you part of Maine's bioeconomy?
So I, you know, first want to say that this is a great topic to talk about today because I feel like so often states try to be everything to everyone, and the bioeconomy is somewhere where Maine can really lead. And I think where we as a company fit in is that we can look out to our coastline and recognize that we have the second most coastline of any state in the country. And that's pretty exciting from an economic growth point of view. And I think, you know, we all know that lobster is king right now on the coast, but we also know that our water is warming 99% faster than 99% of all bodies of water in the world. So we're really looking at, not only a strong bioeconomy on the ocean, but also a changing one. So what we're doing at our company is we are kelp farmers and kelp marketers. We are currently working with 16 partner farms up and down the coast, all of whom are lobstermen looking to diversify their income streams. And we take delicious kelp from the clean, cold waters of Maine, which is an opposite season to the lobster season, and we turn it into delicious products that are all fresh and ready to eat and very different from what else is on the market. And so we're really taking advantage of the fact that Maine has this beautiful coastline, this incredible workforce of lobster fishermen who all have their own boats, know so much about the water, are really great farmers, and the fact that we have this incredible reputation as a state for having this clean water, which gives us a product that is, you know, absolutely above and beyond in quality to anything that's coming in from Asia. It has, you know, it's very healthy for you. And the big bonus here is it actually cleans the water. It removes carbon from the water and nitrogen and makes the water less acidic. The fact that we have such an acidic ocean is damaging to shellfish and shell-forming organisms. And by planting this kelp on farms, during the winter, we're actually creating a halo that's mitigating the effects of ocean acidification. So it's kind of a, we call it the virtuous vegetable because it's good for the consumer, it's good for the coast, and it's good for the water.
Well, thank you so much for calling and telling us about Atlantic Sea Farms. That's Brianna Warner, the CEO of Atlantic Sea Farms. And what she said is interesting because there really are two purposes when folks talk about the bioeconomy, aren't there? There's the generating economic activity and helping people live, good lives. But there's also making sure these products either do no damage or help the planet Earth.
Right. And I think you'll find that a lot of these technology companies that are coming up with these circular economy pathways, that's very important to them. So you don't start a business where you're making this green product if that's not foremost in your concerns. And I would just echo what she just said in terms of Maine is at a global advantage with respect to this bioeconomy because our forests are one of the largest carbon sinks in the world. It's globally relevant. We also have another global crisis looming, and that's a protein deficit. Over the next several decades, we do not have enough protein in the world to feed people. And I think that's where you'll see the state of Maine is very supportive of land-based aquaculture systems, and recently we've seen some really breakthrough-level investments. If you look at the way fish are, it's a minimal input to the fish for maximum output of protein, and it's a really sustainable protein source that is also going to be globally relevant. So the state of Maine is at a manufacturing advantage. When is the last time you've heard that, Jennifer, in this industry? So it's really, really important to think about.
Joining us now, Oliver Gregerson, Managing Director of a company called Ocean Rainforest, which is located in the Faroe Islands. Oliver, thanks for calling in.
Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, Faroe Islands, for those of our listeners who may not know, between Iceland and Norway, independent part of the Kingdom of Denmark. Oliver, tell us about your company and its ties to Maine.
Well, we have been cultivating seaweed here in the Faroe Islands for the last 5-6 years. We actually started 10 years ago with designing a cultivation rig that could withstand open ocean conditions. And we think that in the main, you have great potential for kelp cultivation. And also to follow up on what I said just now about protein, lack of proteins and the need for more food and feed, for that matter. I think there are rich opportunities in Maine and on the coastline there for cultivating kelp, and also to investigate possibilities to go a bit further offshore cultivating kelp and in that way increase the volume.
I understand the structures you use for your seaweed farming, some of them come from Maine?
Well, we have in the last 2 years, we have been working with a company in California to develop a cultivation rig, as we call it, which is basically a cultivation line system where you can seed kelp and it will then grow. We have been developing such a system for California conditions, and there we used Maine Marine Composites as one important subcontractor to do a part of the civil engineering design work. And I think that's one of the interesting aspects about bioeconomy is in many ways we need to do innovative approaches to make business happening. And this calls for a lot of different disciplines, both within chemistry, within biology, within engineering and marketing. And that also creates a lot of opportunities and new job opportunities in coastal and rural areas that are not there today.
Can you tell us why you believe the Nordic countries are doing such a good job in becoming global leaders in the bioeconomy?
I think that when we talk about Iceland and the Faroe Islands, ocean is what we have. I mean, we don't have so much other resources to live from. So we have to make the best of it. And at the same time, it's very important that we do it in a sustainable way. So bioeconomy is a way to opening up to increase value without necessarily using more of the biomass. Because we know in fishery, for instance, that roughly 50% of a fish is not utilized today. And with the bioeconomy approach, we can increase that utilization factor considerably. And then we have the kelp, which has been completely underutilized in terms of cultivation. We have not cultivated it or used it by any means compared to Asia here in the Western, both in the North Atlantic and in the Americas. And kelp represents a resource that can be extremely important both for the feed and food supplies of the future, but also in terms of bioenergy and replacing fossil fuels as a packaging material in terms of bioplastics and so on. So it's a resource that can be grown sustainably. And in addition to that, when we grow kelp or cultivate kelp, we will reduce ocean acidification. We will take up CO2. So we will actually do a lot of benefits for the climate and mitigating climate change by cultivating kelp in large scale.
Dana Eidsness, you wanted to say something?
Yeah. Hi, Oliver.
Hi.
One of the most fascinating things I think about this whole concept of biomaterials is the new materials and processes and new products that you can make from these natural resources. And Oliver, I met you probably about a year and a half to 2 years ago. I was at a conference in the Faroe Islands with a small Maine delegation, and one of my friends from the Nordic Council of Ministers tapped me on the shoulder and said, "What are you doing this afternoon? How would you like to get on a bus with a bunch of Nordic fashion designers and go visit a seaweed farm?" And luckily, I said yes. I mean, who could say no to that? And I visited your seaweed farm and got to go out on a boat with you and watch the harvest. But you had been working with a group of student fashion designers and a couple of Nordic fashion designers to develop a textile using sugar kelp fiber. Can you talk a little bit about that? I just thought that was the neatest thing I'd ever heard.
Yeah, the idea was basically that can we replace some of the materials that today are used for producing textile? Textile production in general is actually quite stressing on putting a lot of stressors on the environment. We are using a lot of water for textile production, for instance, producing cotton. So the idea was, can we use seaweed or extract the components from seaweed to replace some of the products that today are used in textile production, both or perhaps especially those that are fossil-based, but also to reduce the demand for more environmental demanding textile resources. So we have been working on that. We know that it is possible today to produce textile fibers that includes seaweed. The challenge is to increase the amount of seaweed in those fibers so that it can really make a difference in also on an environmental scale. Currently, we are working on a feasibility study on how we can do that. And there are still challenges to deal with in that respect. We have fabrics that contain seaweed. We would like to increase that that amount of seaweed in those fibers. And I think that if we put enough research effort into that, that will be possible within a couple of years. I mean, everything, and when I say possible, I mean also commercially possible, because everything is possible in a lab scale and when you're trying really to do something to make it work. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, whatever we do has to be commercially viable. It has to be able to compete what's in the market today. And I think that is one of the challenges we will face over the next couple of years. That is, how can we produce textile fibers that also are based on seaweed, but that are compatible with existing textile fibers in the market.
Well, Oliver, thank you so much for calling in today. That's Oliver Gregerson, Managing Director of Ocean Rainforest, calling in from the Faroe Islands. I noticed, Charlotte, that when Oliver was saying that these things, these products have to be commercially viable, you were nodding. That is one of the big roadblocks, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And we're very fortunate as a state to have the Maine Technology Institute, which has taken really a leadership role in identifying the new technologies that are most worthy of investment. And so just recently they announced investment in two different bio-based companies. One, a company called Biofine, which is making a chemical to add to heating oil, a bio-based chemical made from wood. And then another and they're going to be doing that in Bucksport. And then another company called GoLab, which makes insulation from wood for the home construction market that is bio-based and eco-friendly. So the Maine Technology Institute has a process that it goes through to determine, will this be commercially relevant? Is this viable? Is their business plan strong? What are the technologies that are worthy of the state of Maine's investment dollars? And that's really important.
A related email from Nika: how can the state of Maine encourage emerging bio-based technologies to locate in our state?
Well, that's a great question. And I will point out, the state of Maine actually leads the country in the highest survival rate at 88% for first-year businesses.
All first-year businesses or first-year bio-based businesses?
All entrepreneurship.
Wow.
So that was in the Maine Development Foundation's recent measures of growth report. That is outstanding.
Yes.
That we lead the nation in that. And I think part of that is due to the entrepreneurial spirit that the people in Maine have, this, spirit for innovation. And so we need to find ways to keep entrepreneurs coming up with those good ideas and supporting them. And I think there are other ways that we can support the bioeconomy, whether it's certain ways to make the business climate friendly, and also going through this process that MTI has to make sure that we're investing in good, smart business plans and good technology.
We'll go to Paul, who's calling from Owl's Head. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I am so happy to hear everything that is being said today. I'm not an old man, but I'm an older man. Yeah, I've been in Maine all my life. My family's been here. I have indigenous blood I'm proud of. And to hear the work that UMaine is doing, and thank you, what was the young lady's name that spoke of everything so nice?
Well, I have Dana and Charlotte here.
No, what was the, Brianna?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. That's reality. The reality is that people in Maine are not going to accept anything other than let's keep ourselves together and let's help everything go. And I'm just very proud of all the work that is done in this state by young people and older people. And I listen to your show all the time. And this is what we have to do. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul, for your call. Dana, you're nodding. This is what we have to do.
Yeah, well, you had asked a little while ago what some of these countries are doing to become leaders in the global bioeconomy. And across the board, in the Nordic countries, they have bioeconomy strategies. There's a written strategy for each of these countries. They have them at the national level. They have them at the local level. They include government, academia, research community, workforce development folks, businesses, industry associations. Everybody's involved and on the same page for creating these strategies. And the other thing that's very noticeable, and I wish Oliver were still on the line because he's part of this, they collaborate. So the West Nordic region, as an example, which is where Oliver's located, so it's comprised of Iceland, the Faroe Islands, and Greenland. You know, they have a shared bioeconomy strategy that they've come up with together. And, you know, they've assembled a West Nordic bioeconomy panel and stakeholder platform, of which Oliver is playing a very important role. And that is coming together. It brings together everything from government ministries at the highest levels to industry representatives, and again, academia, non-governmental organizations, and more.
And I read that Canada just created a bioeconomy strategy. And the article I read, Canada was saying one of the last countries, we are one of the last countries to develop this. Does the U.S. have a bioeconomy strategy?
Yes, the USDA does have one. And I'm trying to think of the title of it, but I think it's a billion-ton vision they want to use. There's so much biomass in the United States. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting about the state of Maine is we're competing against other biomass. We're competing against corn and soy and cassava and sugar beets. And if you look at the life cycle analysis of these products, wood beats them all. We're much more sustainable than Midwestern industrial corn for so many reasons. So we're at another advantage.
If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to take another quick break. You're listening to Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Springvale Nurseries in Sanford, dedicated to bringing beauty to Southern Maine gardens for over 35 years. SpringvaleNurseriesInc.com. Green Hut Galleries, presenting a solo exhibition of Ed Douglas's paintings, May 2nd through June 1st, greenhutgalleries.com. And Occo Cisco School, empowering students with learning differences to become confident, independent learners. OccoCiscoSchool.org.
Thousands of migrants cross the southern border every day. Some try to evade Border Patrol.
They're not equipped for the walk. They don't bring enough water. And for some reason, they get hurt or they get sick. They're going to be left behind.
Operation Identification helps to repatriate the remains of those who don't make it. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening.
Coming up on the next Commonwealth Club program, Valerie Jarrett tells the story of how she became the ultimate White House insider during the presidency of Barack Obama. She discusses her upbringing in Iran and London by her American parents, as well as getting her start in politics in Chicago, where she met Barack Obama and his future wife, Michelle, on the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the potential of Maine's bioeconomy. Joining me, Charlotte Mace, who is director of the state's Office of Business Development. She previously served as the executive director of BioBased Maine. And Dana Eidsness is director of the Maine North Atlantic Development Office. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Kai calling from Phippsburg. Hi, Kai. Go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Listen, I thought it was a fluke, but I checked it up again on the internet. UMaine has developed a golf ball made from lobster shells, and there's on the internet, there's a whole bunch of material on it. So I'm not a golf player, but it would be wonderful if we pursued that a little bit more. The other quirk that I had heard just this morning is that there is more plastic in the ocean now in actual tonnage than there are fish in the ocean.
Thank you for your call, Kai. And we do have a Maine Calling program on plastics coming up in just a couple weeks. But let's talk about lobster shells, Charlotte. What else can they be used for?
Well, and I am not an expert on lobster shells by any stretch, but I did hear that golf ball story. And I believe, and you'd have to ask some of the lobster experts in the state, and I would cite Reedy Seafood in Saco, which is building this amazing $22 million facility in Saco to do lobster processing, which is something we very much need as a state. And I was having a conversation with them the other day, and I think there's research to there's something in the lobster shells that's antimicrobial, so it can also be used in bandages and wound dressing, which is amazing. But I am not a lobster expert. I did want to talk about the ocean plastic for just a quick second. And I believe the study that he was referring to is the Ellen MacArthur Foundation came out with a statistic that said that by 2050, plastics will outweigh fish in the ocean by weight. So that is substantial. And that's why you'll see a recent press release that came out of Nestle, parent company of Poland Spring, saying that they've partnered with Danimer, a technology company that can make one of the world's only bioplastics that meets a marine biodegradability standard. So that means when the plastic goes into the ocean, it biodegrades in a way that's beneficial. So I think we'll see more and more partnerships with technology companies that know how to come up with different ways of doing things.
An email from A.W., landfill gas recovery and anaerobic digestion of wastewater and food waste are ways that Maine can generate its own natural gas. Does the bioeconomy initiative look to expand or address these areas?
I can address that unless... Mm-hmm. Yes, municipal solid waste is definitely an area of interest for if you talk to people about bioeconomy. We have a company called FiberRight, which is in the process of opening a facility in Hamden, Maine, and they have a vision to use the organic waste components of garbage to then use bio-based processes to make fuel. We also see landfill gases. There's ways to capture flue gas from smokestacks and capture that carbon that would otherwise be released and then find ways to harness it and make fuels and make chemicals. So absolutely, that's part of the conversation.
We'll go to Roger calling from Portland. Hi, Roger. Go ahead.
Hi, it's great to be on the show and hear that you've got the A-team on there today. Hi, Charlotte and Dana.
Hi.
Hello.
I work with Maine Standard Biofuels, and I've met with both in the past. And I just am calling because we're proud to be a part of this industry in Maine. We are the only biorefinery that takes fused cooking oil or waste oil and refines it into usable products, biodegradable, 100% natural cleaners, solvents, and lubricants. And I've had the pleasure of meeting both Dana and Charlotte, who do great work, frankly, to promote the industry as a whole in the state of Maine out there in the world. So,
well, Roger, thank you. And do you find that if you were able to speak to policymakers, what would you like to see happen to promote and improve the bioeconomy in Maine?
Okay, great question. And before I answer that, I'd like to say that we're also very proud to be a part of the Maine International Trade Center show, a global showcase coming up this Friday. But in reference to that, and I don't know the specific bill, but there is something in front of, I believe, the House of representatives whereby there will be a tax credit of some sort. And I believe Charlotte or Dana may be able to speak more fluently on that. But that's one way we've seen the state with the new regime, shall we say, in the office, get behind some small businesses here in Maine who are focused on the bioeconomy.
Sure. So you'd like to see some tax credits for people who are going into the bioeconomy. Roger, thank you so much for calling in. Good luck with your company. We'll go to an email from Ryan. Have the guests heard of any efforts in Maine to develop bioproducts from biochar or fungal plastics replacements?
That's a really, really interesting question. And the answer would be yes. And that's one of the things that was great about my old job at BioBase Maine is that there were so many technologies that sort of came across my desk, and people are doing all sorts of interesting things. Biochar is a byproduct of a lot of the biofuel processes, and it's currently used as a soil amendment. So we're always looking for various ways to use biochar. One technology I did want to mention, because it touches on the intersection of aquaculture and the forest industry, is there's a lot of technology companies right now that are using sugars, like from wood, and they can make single-cell protein out of those sugars to feed to fish. So you can take wood, turn it into fish food, and feed fish with it. So that is a sort of really interesting way to think about the state of Maine taking forest byproducts, turning it into single-cell protein, which is done using microbes, and then using it in our aquaculture industry. That is really, really, really interesting to think about.
I want to go back to something, Charlotte, that you said at the very beginning of this program when you were talking about how this is kind of a nascent part of the economy and a lot of investment is needed. Are we talking about, is what's needed these big multi-million dollar grants to places like the University of Maine? Are we talking about venture capital, or is there a space for small entrepreneurs with an idea?
Well, that's a really great question. And if you think about the biorefinery that Dana was talking about in Finland, the idea behind a biorefinery is that you have one anchor product. It could be biofuel, but in Maine, I think what we may see a little bit of is a pulp or a sawmill. And then where the entrepreneurs come in is they use sort of the side stream products that are coming off that central process. And with respect to access to capital, which is always a problem for entrepreneurs in Maine or people that want to start projects, it's setting up that collaboration with all of the partners along the value chain. And that's where some of the big brands come in. So we need to have conversations with big brands in Maine that have pull and say, we want our products to be made greener. So you have the technology company and you have the facility that could maybe house the technology company. Then you have the town that's willing for a new investment. Then you have the brand. And then you have the state that also has resources to invest. So it's putting all those partners together. It's not just one person with a good idea. They can't be successful alone. It has to be a team effort to make sure that value chain has success.
Yeah, just adding to that, I mean, I'm thinking about Norway as an example, and I have in my notes that in Norway they have scalerators versus accelerators, and I think I made up the word scalerator, but what I mean by that is that they have biorefineries and bioprocessing infrastructure for rapid materials development and prototyping. So, for instance, if I had 5 tons of lobster shells and I wanted to know what in the world can I make from these lobster shells, if I were in the north of Norway in Tromsø, I could share my lobster shells with the BioTep facility in Tromsø. They could put it through their system, and what would come out on the other end is a clean, usable, powdered material that could be analyzed, and they could figure out, you know, what are the proteins? What are the enzymes? Are there lipids in there that have been separated from the dry materials that we could use for other purposes? So they have a large-scale biorefinery for marine bioprocessing in Norway. And this is a public-private investment in infrastructure, and it allows businesses to quickly determine the usefulness of what they have in terms of raw materials. But the infrastructure is large enough to scale a startup to commercial scale and get them to market before they even have to invest in their own equipment, which I think is key.
We have a note from our producer. I mentioned that we have a show on plastics coming up on Maine Calling. That's going to be May 28th. We'll go to Steve calling from Orono. Steve, we're near the end of the program, so if you could be quick, that would be great.
I can be quick. It's all great stuff. So I'm confused about the salmon farm in Belfast. Why does there appear to be so much pushback when it sounds like we need more of that happening all over the state of Maine?
Well, that's a great question, and I will just first reiterate something that I said earlier, that the state of Maine is very supportive of these opportunities, and I think we just have to make sure that we have a really robust conversation about each one of these opportunities and make sure that the community members are involved, and then just to make sure that there's accurate facts out there. And one thing I will say about aquaculture, it is a very clean business. Often the water coming out of that process is cleaner than the water coming in. So I think it's just making sure everyone's on the same page with respect to the facts, and then also the connection between new opportunities and good jobs and communities that are really being prosperous. And I think it's just getting the facts out there.
Steve, thanks for your call. Marty on Facebook posts, lots of activity in this area with high potential startups like Go Labs and Biofine putting us on the map. We can learn a lot from Finland, but I think they can also learn from us. So Dana, we're almost out of time, but tell us again about Trade Day this week in Portland, correct?
Yes, May 24th at the Holiday Inn by the Bay in Portland. We have Maine International Trade Day. That is the Trade Center's largest event of the year. We bring together about 300 to 400 of Maine and New England's most internationally active companies and people. This year, our theme is Maine's future in the global bioeconomy, and we're bringing in guests from several Nordic countries. We're bringing in our keynote speaker from Finland. She's the permanent secretary for the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry in Finland and was very much hands-on in making the policy changes and doing the stakeholder engagement that was necessary to transition Finland's forest economy to a bioeconomy. We've got Oliver Gregersen, who was just on the phone with us here, coming to Portland, which we're excited about, and some guests from Norway and a couple more from Finland. So lots of great experts coming in from both the marine and the forest bioeconomy sectors coming to share their stories. You know, what did it take for them to become successful in their own bioeconomies?
Well, and we have information about that on our Facebook page and web page. Thank you both for being here today. That was Dana Eidsness, director of the Maine North Atlantic Development Office, and Charlotte Mace, director of the Office of Business Development with the Maine Department of Economic and Community Development. Today's program was part of Maine Calling's ongoing coverage of topics related to climate change. Nikki Shields ran the board today. All sorts of information at mainecalling.org. The program is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.